Truth Seekers. How you doing?
You okay?
Mike Malloy here. How's your week?
You're supposed to say those kind of things, right?
Welcome to tonight's program. This hour is being sponsored by Kim Maynard. And Kim has a message. In brightest day and darkest night, no evil shall escape his sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware the Mike Malloy Show's bite.
All right, Kim, thank you.
A poem. Thanks, Kim. Kim is our first hour sponsor. Santorum. He, you know, the failed former junior senator from Pennsylvania, he speaks to a crowd at the Armory in Janesville, Wisconsin, last week, Monday or Tuesday. And in his speech, just like Mitt Romney, both these men are total liars. I don't know how Santorum is raising his children. I don't know how Romney raised his. But in both their religions that these two clowns claim they practice, you know, lying is a big no-no. But they're both out there just lying through their teeth, lying about everything. I mean, just flat out provable lies. So in the speech in Janesville, Wisconsin, Santorum, you know, was making up crap again about Obama. And, all right, let's just play it. You tell me if you can figure out what Rick Santorum almost says here.
We know the candidate Barack Obama, what he was like. The anti-war, government nig, America was a source for division around the world.
Oh, shut up. Oh, shut up. Blah people. You got the blah people, too?
The state of Iowa is going to get fined if they don't sign up more people under the Medicaid program. They're just pushing harder and harder to get more and more of you dependent upon them so they can get your vote. That's what the bottom line is. I don't want to make people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money. I want to give them the opportunity to go out and earn the money.
Oh, shut up. Now, here's his explanation. For which one is explanation? For the blah people. Okay.
You threw in black people when most of the people, as you know, on welfare are white people.
I didn't say that. If you look at it, what I started to say is a word and then sort of changed and it sort of came out and people said I said black. I didn't. I don't use the term black very often.
No, you'll use the term nig. Play the nig
again. You
know
the candidate Barack Obama, what he was like. The anti-war, government nig, America was a source for division around the world.
I don't say black people, I say nig people. Damn. Well,
dependent upon them so they can get your vote. That's what the bottom line is. I don't want to make black people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God. Now, Santorum's campaign staff, of course, is right now is searching desperately for some word that starts with nig. Nickelback? No, that's more like a nick. This is nig. You got to come up with something that starts with nig. There are very few words that start with nig. I just... yeah, at least words you can say on the radio. Nig. Let me see. Now, Santorum's spokesman, a guy named Hogan Gidley. I'm sorry. Hogan Gidley. Man. Maybe that's what he was trying to say. He was trying to say Hogan Gidley when he said nig. Is that it? Anyway, Santorum's spokesman Hogan Gidley told Raw Story when asked to comment about this. Oh, come on! Give me a break! That's unbelievable! What does it say about those that are running around this with this story? That's where their mind goes. You know, I'm not gonna dig? I'm not gonna dignify that with an answer. It's absolutely ridiculous. All right, play it again. Maybe Hogan Gidley. fucking giddily. Oh, my God.
Play. Anti-war government nig.
Anti-war government nig.
The anti-war government nig. America was...
an anti-war? Barack Obama? Who's invaded...
To make people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money.
Yeah, okay. So Obama, I wish Obama were anti-war. What are you talking about, Santorum? So there you have it. Play that again. I want to make sure that you know... We got that right.
The anti-war government nig.
Come on, Santorum staff. Come on with a word. What other word starts with nig? Come on. Come on, you got to have something.
Maybe we're calling
him a pig. Come on. That's incredible. These people are. I don't know. They're just. They're just mad. They're just insane. Anti-war government nig. Jeez. Where's my man, Dr. Saxman tonight? He would tell me how to handle this. Dr. Saxman, he's probably working. Shut up, Malloy. He's probably working. But anti-war government, Nick. Man. You know who Representative Joe Walsh is? He's an Illinois congressman. And he doesn't pay his child support. He owes his he doesn't know his former wife. He owes his children over $100,000. He's a Tea Party favorite because he's a lying son of a bitch. I mean, just purely and simply, and abandons children. All Tea Partiers abandon their children. They will do anything to, they would do anything to save a cluster of cells up inside a woman's uterus because that gives them control over a woman's uterus and hence over the woman. But when it comes to a child, tea baggers hate children. They don't want anything to do with them. And Joe Walsh is typical of that. So in an interview with Politico yesterday, and this was at Think Progress, our military affairs correspondent, Sharon, sent this to me. And Sharon says, why do Republicans hate the troops? She adds, P.S., I can't find any evidence that Joe Walsh ever served in the military. But in an interview with Politico yesterday, Joe Walsh downplayed his opponent Tammy Duckworth's military service and her injury. You know what her injury was, Tammy Duckworth? And by the way, Tammy Duckworth, I believe, she's a lieutenant colonel in the Illinois Army National Guard. You know what her injury was? She had both of her legs and part of one arm blown off by an IED. That's her injury. I mean, calling that an injury is like, calling cancer a wart on your head. I want to tell you what Joe Walsh says of Tammy Duckworth. Part of what he said was, a female wounded veteran? Eh. I mean... Why do anybody who's ever served in the military ever vote Republican? Guys and girls who've served in the military, you don't get it yet. You still don't understand. Republicans want you dead. They want you to go fight for corporate America and then to have the damn decency to die. You're not supposed to come back here. You're not supposed to come back all wounded and PTSD'd and all that. You're supposed to go die. That's what Republicans want you to do. They hate your guts, soldier.
Stay out of the sun. It only burns my skin. Sky is full of poison. The atmosphere's too thin.
a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, it is. 21 past the hour. Justina Maryland, before we go back to Jill Walsh, she says, Mike, maybe little Ricky was trying to talk about the part of the brain region affected in people with Parkinson's disease, the substantia nigra. Although the N-I in nigra sounds like high, so it's substantia nigra. Maybe, you know, maybe he was just making a mistake. Maybe he was talking about that. Justine concludes, that's the best I can do for that dumb, for that darn racist, misogynist, and all-around child hater known as Rick Santorum. What a piece of human waste. And how polite are we to call Santorum that? Justine. Justine! Yeah. Oh, the guy cracks me up. Joe Walsh. He violates his commitment to Catholicism because his Redeemer said, suffer the little children to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven. And Joe Walsh denies his children food, clothing, and shelter. He refuses to pay child support while he goes on expensive vacations. He's also a Tea Party member, which immediately identifies him as being clinically insane. And he also is going to have his ass handed to him by Tammy Duckworth, who's running against him. Duckworth served in Iraq and then at the Veterans Administration. She lost both legs and part of her arm in combat. This is what he said in an interview with Politico. Quote, I have so much respect for what she did and the fact that she sacrificed her body for this country. Now let's move on. What else has she done? Female wounded veteran. She's nothing more than a handpicked Washington bureaucrat. David Axelrod, Rahm Emanuel just picked her up and dropped her into this district. Wow. Why? Are you a veteran? Are you a young veteran? Most older veterans understand that Republicans hate them. Republicans want them all dead. Every single vet, Republican wants to see him dead. Or she now, before that person comes back from combat. Don't come back. Just go over there and fight. Have a nice 10-to-1 kill ratio. And then have the decency to die. For Christ's sake, you're going to come back here with your arms and legs blown off and traumatic brain injury? And then what? We have to appropriate money for you? Oh! This is the Republican attitude. This is the Republican attitude. The only good veteran to a Republican is a dead veteran. I don't know why you younger vets don't understand that. Whether you saw combat or not. Whether you came back grievously wounded or not, Republicans will do anything to destroy you. And when you do come back, oh, by the way, when you're in combat, they make sure that you're undertrained and underprepared. And for years, the underside of your Humvee was a death trap. Republicans hate you. Why don't you just accept that fact? You don't have to hate back. Just stop voting for these pig bastards. I mean, why? You think Republicans have family values? Are you kidding? You are. Come on, Gyrene. Wake up. Smell the napalm. These people don't have anything for you. Nothing. Representative Joe Walsh, Republican of Illinois, has since tried to walk back his statement. He told ChicagoMag.com regarding what he said about Tammy Duckworth, quote, I'm catching myself when I'm talking. I meant something other than how it came out. Now, he didn't add or expound on what he meant. It's kind of like Rick Santorum talking about the anti-war candidate.
The anti-war government nig.
The anti-war government nig. He's referring to the President of the United States there, too, you know. So, Joe Walsh, what else has she done? Female wounded veteran, she's nothing more than a Washington bureaucrat. No, she's a little bit more than that, Jill Walsh. She did what you wouldn't do if somebody held a gun to your head. She joined the military. She had two legs and an arm shot off. And you are not qualified to empty her bedpan if she happens to use one. You piece of trash. I often catch myself when I'm talking. I meant something other than how it came out. Yeah, what? Walsh's insulting comment is just another instance in a long, long line of offensive behavior against all sorts of people. But that's, you know, what he does. Tammy Duckworth, by the way, was a Black Hawk helicopter pilot. She's one of the first women to fly combat missions in Iraq. And we can all talk about the horror of that war and all the people who died needlessly. But the fact remains that Tammy Duckworth paid grievously for her participation in that war. Two legs and an arm blown off. And this disgusting punk, Joe Walsh, says what he says.
The tears are filling up their glasses. No expression, no expression. Hide my head, I wanna drown my sorrow. No tomorrow, no tomorrow. And I find it kinda funny, I find it kinda sad.
Five before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Kim Maynard. Kim's message: in brightest day and darkest night, no evil shall escape his sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware the Mike Malloy Show's bite. Thanks, Kim. There's a backstory to Kim's sponsorship tonight that I just found out about, but since I wasn't asked to give the backstory, we'll just leave it at that. Thank you, Kim, very much. Tammy Duckworth. In 2003, she was working on a project for Rotary International to provide wheelchairs for the disabled in developing countries, including Iraq. And as a captain in the Illinois National Guard, she was mobilized for Operation Iraqi Freedom and deployed in 2004. As a Black Hawk helicopter pilot, she was one of the first women to fly combat missions in Iraq until November 12, 2004, when her helicopter was hit by an RPG as she was evacuating wounded troops under fire. Tammy lost both legs and part of the use of her right arm in the explosion, was awarded the Purple Heart for her combat injuries. During her recovery at Walter Reed Hospital, Tammy was one of the highest-ranking amputees and became an advocate for her fellow soldiers. Her leadership was recognized when she was asked to testify before Congress and recruited to run for the House of Representatives in Illinois. After losing a close race, Tammy continued to serve as a major in the National Guard and became director of Illinois' Department of Veterans Affairs. While there, she implemented many firsts in the nation, her first in the nation programs to address post-traumatic stress, to improve traumatic brain injury screening, and reduce homelessness among vets. And this piece of garbage called Joe Walsh says, she was a bureaucrat. Female, wounded, So what else she done? And you know what? There are people in Illinois who are going to vote for Joe Walsh. Do you know that? People who would tell you they support the military and they believe in Jesus and they support the flag and they love their country. And they're going to vote for a scum-sucking devil like Joe Walsh. Isn't that something? In 2009, Tammy Duckworth was tapped by President Obama to be Assistant Secretary of Veterans Affairs, where she sought to improve the standard of care for vets. She oversaw the VA's efforts to end veteran homelessness and lead initiatives for female vets. Military service in her family is a tradition. At least one family member has served during every period of conflict since the Revolutionary War. Tammy followed suit by joining the reserves in graduate school and chose to fly helicopters because it was one of the few combat jobs open to women. She is a graduate of the University of Hawaii, received a Master's of Arts in International Affairs from George Washington University. She and her husband, Brian, an Army major, live in Hoffman Estates, suburb of Chicago, where their home was rebuilt for wheelchair access in 2005 by her fellow soldiers and friends. Despite her injuries, she declined a military medical retirement and continues to drill as a lieutenant colonel in the Illinois Army National Guard. And this piece of vomit, Joe Walsh, says, female wounded veteran, what else has she done? Female wounded veteran, what else has she done? Walsh, you are a rancid bastard. You really are. You are the lowest of the low. But Joe Walsh is a Catholic and a member of the Tea Party and doesn't pay his child support. You got to wonder, how did this subhuman get elected by the good people in his district, those good Republicans out there in Illinois, huh? How do you all do that? How do you elect something as worthless as Joe Walsh to represent you? Really? Is that what you people in Joe Walsh's district are? Cowards? Child haters? Disrespect veterans who come back with their limbs blown off? But you're good Christians, right? Yeah. Don't you come from the same district of Henry Hyde? I mean, isn't that the same district out there? Hoffman Estates, around in there someplace? Henry Hyde, another good Catholic who maintained a 25-year-long adulterous affair, broke up a family. Didn't he cause the husband to almost commit suicide, Kathy? Remember that story? And you people keep voting Republican, don't you? Well, go ahead and vote for Joe Walsh, and maybe your God will make some value judgment on your doing that and do something fun to you. You think? Man. Man, oh man, oh man. It just takes me a while sometimes to process what the depths of depravity that Republicans, conservatives, right-wingers, teabaggers, and their stooges in this country have sunk to. It just, I don't know, it's just hard to talk about it. Paul Ryan, another one, no respect for military officers. Also from our veteran, or from our military affairs correspondent, Sharon Gordy. Yesterday, during a policy discussion hosted by the National Journal, Representative Paul Ryan, you know who he is, the budget writer for the House, he said that America's top military brass are lying about their support for Obama's Pentagon budget. When asked why the Republican budget, his budget, which passed the House yesterday, ignores the general's advice and increases military spending, Ryan said, quote, "We don't think the generals are giving us their true advice," end quote. In other words, he's calling the military commanders a liar. Now, there's a way to handle somebody like Paul Ryan, right? Of course. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Martin Dempsey, fired back at Ryan. Wall Street Journal reports that Dempsey said, quote, "There's a difference between having someone say they don't believe what you said versus calling us collectively liars." General Dempsey said that aboard a U.S. military aircraft. After a four-day visit to Latin America, he went on, quote, "My response is, I stand by my testimony. This was a very much a strategy-driven process to which we mapped the budget," end quote. How does it matter to Paul Ryan, this pasty-faced little bastard? The Joint Chiefs are all liars. Another teabagger. There are ways to handle a Paul Ryan, aren't there? Back in February, General Dempsey said that the Pentagon's new budget will, quote, "maintain our military's decisive edge and help sustain America's global leadership," end quote. He added that the budget was, quote, "a collaborative effort," end quote, among the nation's top military officers as well as combat leaders. And Paul Ryan calls these people liars. Obama has tried to reduce the military budget. We already spend more than the next 10,000 countries on Earth combined. And Paul Ryan calls the top brass in this country liars. There are ways to handle a Paul Ryan. Wow. It's incredible. So you have Paul Ryan and you have Joe Walsh, and there are people who are going to continue to vote for Paul Ryan. Good, God-fearing, Bible-thumping Christians. Military-supporting Christians who will never even hear that Ryan said that. Because they watch Fox Terror Broadcast Network, and the Rupert Murdoch Terror Broadcast Network would never put anything that real in front of its brain-dead, thumb-sucking, booger-eating audience. Shame on you people. Shame on you Republicans. For the rest of your lives, I hope shame just follows you like a huge garden slug. Shame on all of you.
Harder and harder to get more and more of you dependent upon them so they can get your vote. That's what the bottom line is. I don't want to make live people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money.
Yeah, what'd he say? I don't use the term black people. Of course not. I use the term MIG. Play the other one. Play the other one. Play the one where he uses this word nig. I don't know. The shirt for what?
The anti-war government nig. The America was a source for.
Yeah. Anti-war government nig. Where's Dr. Sachs? I need Dr. Sachs.
I didn't say that. If you look at it, what I started to say is a word and then sort of changed and it sort of came out. And people said I said black. I didn't. I don't use the term black very often.
Why should you?
Anti-war, government nig.
Right. Why should you use black when you got that other word? You know. Aren't you Republicans really something? I don't even call you Republicans. You're not. You right-wing devils. You Bible-beating right-wing devils. Oh, my God. This hour has been sponsored by Kim Maynard. Kim's message. In brightest day and darkest night, no evil shall escape his sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware the Mike Malloy Show's bite. That's great, Kim. I love it. Thank you very much for the sponsorship. The Pig Man. The Pig Man. On Monday, just passed, America Live host Megyn Kelly, that's one of the brain-dead individuals who ectoplasm their way across the set at the Rupert Murdoch terror broadcast organization. Megyn Kelly spoke with Mark Stevens, the founder of the global marketing firm MSCO, and an advertiser for the Pig Man's radio program, who says his company has been targeted by people who want to put him out of business for his connection to the God figure Rush. Earlier, Limbaugh had addressed the matter on his show, where he said that his good friend Mark Stevens believes there is a coordinated attack on his business spearheaded by a group he wouldn't name, but that Limbaugh was happy to. Media Matters! Media Matters? Oh my goodness sakes alive! Media Matters! But Mark Stevens, the founder of the global marketing firm MSCO, for his part, firmly intends to double down against what he describes as an act of, quote, internal American terrorism. He told Megyn Kelly, quote, you don't have to strap on a suicide bomber's belt to engage in terrorism. Terrorism derives from the term to invoke fear in people. They've called my people and my company. They've called the women at my company and told them they're women haters. The most horrible terms. They've told me these are tens of thousands of emails, most of them positive, you know, of course. But the small group, they've told us that we're under surveillance. The email subject line says, citizen of the Internet, police of the Internet, Mark, you're in danger. Your house is going to be surrounded by buses. Oh, no. Your business is going to be destroyed. Eek! You people are in trouble. Ah! This is terrorism. Why don't we start calling it what it is? You candy-ass little punk. You don't know what terrorism is. Have you gotten emails yet threatening to anally rape your 7-year-old daughter? Have you gotten those? Have you gotten emails yet where violent acts against your wife are described in detail, all of which, by the way, from you scum bastards out there, turned over to the FBI. What else am I going to do with them? And just to let the right wing know how effective they are, they're real terrorists. You want to talk about terrorism? So, you don't know what terrorism is, you piece of human waste. Mark Stevens, MSCO. You don't know what terrorism is, you little crybaby punk.
Ow, Megan! I'm getting millions of emails. Of course, they're all supportive, except that little tiny bit. Ooh, I just don't know what to do. I love Rush.
Oh, well. We're about ready for a break. When we come back, we're probably going to open up the phone lines. The number here is 877-996-2556. So if you want to join in. And then at the bottom of the next hour coming, we're going to go to do podcast trivia. Do-do-do-do.
We know the candidate, Barack Obama,
what he was like, the anti-war government nig... play that again. We got a second. Go ahead, play it again. Go ahead.
The anti-war government nig, the America was...
Do it one more time. Can you work it one more time?
The anti-war government nig, the...
Yeah, Papa, the... That's my kind of Catholicism. All right, stick around. We shall return. I'm Mike Malloy. Think of this. Welcome back, 7 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by John Blizzard Jr. His message, no better way to celebrate my birthday, go get a mic. Thanks, John. I like that name, Blizzard. Happy birthday, John. All right, the phone lines are open if you want to call in. 877-996-2556. While you are doing that, if you choose to, from Prairie 2, there's no bread, but we have circuses. Prairie 2 writes, the corporate media is talking constantly about the lottery and the potential two-thirds of a $1 billion prize tonight. To their credit, they do point out the 176 million to one odds and how absurd that is, all the while showing the people lined up for blocks, certain they can beat the odds. The people they interview in these lines are all gambling to have the American dream, which is to pay the bills, send the kids to college, buy a house, help their friends, their stray cats, or maybe get their teeth fixed. Of course, a lottery like this is harmless. It's harmless fun in and of itself. The tragedy isn't just the occasional that the occasional person spends their life savings to buy tickets because they're so sure of winning. It's what our society has come to, that these people are increasingly seen as normal, hopeful people and not as pathetic. Really, they are the tragic victims of 30 years of Republican economic thinking. For the bottom 80% of Americans, the lottery is there one shot at economic freedom? When these lotteries started, you heard lots of stories about someone who spent their life savings because they were sure they could win. Of course, you do increase your odds of by buying more than one ticket, but not enough to matter. There are even companies formed to buy out all the tickets when the odds were only 50 million to one. It's physically impossible to do this with the new higher odds. I'm surprised they don't raise the odds so high that nobody would ever be likely to win. They still sell tickets. In fact, the state's play the lottery too. The states with the winner gets a nice windfall from the income tax on close to $1 billion. The state might fill some potholes, but more likely give another tax break to individuals who by themselves make $1 billion a year or more and typically pay no significant taxes. What to do with that much money if you win? Well, I've been giving it some thought. People are always wanting investment advice. The thing is, there is no safe place to put money. Besides the fundamental instability of the crazy situation we find ourselves in, there is a realistic level of paranoia to consider. If you have lots of money, you aren't suddenly allowed past the velvet rope by the 1%'s bouncer. No. Having real money makes you a target for those who make their money by looting and pillaging. They don't just go after the middle class, you know. Even if you invest conservatively, you could wake up one morning and find your investment is now worthless, since most investments today are just paper. Buying hard assets is no guarantee of safety, as their value is set by markets that are inflated and then collapse to far lower than is realistic. To be safe with your money, you really need to be in the too-big-to-fail class. The people who just create money out of thin air. And they don't let riffraff like you and me in, no matter how much money we have for now. You weren't a legacy admission to Yale? Forget about it. Now, with a couple of $100 million, leaving the country is an option. But you're kidding yourself that you're really safe. Safety is in numbers, but not the kind on your bank account. PrayNumeral2.com, just throwing a wet blanket all over the great fun and frivolity of... No, I guess he's right. I... Don't get me started on the lotteries, you know, the state-sanctioned gambling. I don't dare start that topic because it just drives me insane. We have the Hope Scholarship System here in Georgia that is funded by the Georgia Lottery. And a lot of kids who have maintained A and B averages have gotten some financial assistance, considerable amount of financial assistance, in going on to a state-sponsored or state-run school in Georgia. They're not going to pay you to go to Emory, but they will pay you to go to Georgia State, University of Georgia, Georgia Tech, Georgia Southern. What's the one that Newt used to, quote, teach, end quote, at out in Carrollton, Georgia, West Georgia University, University of West Georgia. But the Republican-controlled government in Georgia has recently informed the public that the Hope Scholarship Fund is starting to deplete because not enough people are buying tickets because people don't have money. Even the people who normally will spend the milk money or part of the rent money or the phone bill money to go buy tickets. So the lottery in and of itself, if it gets above, you know, 50 cents a ticket, and if you buy more than one 50 cent ticket, you're declaring something about yourself. And I'm not going to criticize it. I'm just saying you're declaring something about yourself. But for the most part, here in the Peach State, the people who buy lottery tickets are making sure that the government of the state of Georgia doesn't have to get real about its education funding system, that the Republican leadership of the state of Georgia doesn't have to get real about a lot of stuff. But that's the way it goes. Pow! There was something else here that I found today. Oh, yeah. And it's right here. If you're on hold, stay there just a second. We'll get to your call momentarily. Do you remember Julia the young dark-haired mechanic who repairs the machines at the Ministry of Truth, Many True. Remember Julia? All right, I'll come. Well, let me just give you a thumbnail sketch of Julia. When we read the entire novel 1984 in this program, Kathy was Julia. Got to the point where she was scaring me. But one day at the Ministry of Truth, as Winston Smith assisted a woman who had fallen down, she surreptitiously handed him a folded paper note. And later at his desk, he covertly reads the message. I love you. The name of the woman, of course, is Julia, the young dark-haired mechanic. Before that occasion, though, Winston had loathed the sight of her. Why? He presumed that she was a member of the fanatical Junior Anti-Sex League because she wore the red sash of the league and because she was the type of woman he believed he could not attract. She was young and puritanical. Nonetheless, his hostility toward her vanishes upon reading the message, I love you. And you remember what happens next. Winston and Julia begin having their sexual affair that turns into a love affair. First, they were meeting in the country, and then a clearing in the woods, and then at the belfry of a ruined church, and finally in a rented room atop an antique shop in a proletarian neighborhood of London. And there they think they're safe and unobserved because the rented bedroom has no apparent telescreen. But unknown to Winston and Julia, the thought police are aware of their every move, until the telescreen says, what was it? You are the damned. Is that what the line was? Keep that in mind for a second. While you keep that in mind, think of Ann Coulter. We'll be right back.
Get your news unfiltered with Mike Malloy.
Baby, oh love. Baby, oh love. 21 before the hour. Baby, oh love. So did you think about that? Julia from 1984 and Ann Coulter from 2012. What's the connection? A little piece by Stephen Jonas, whom I'm sure you're familiar with. MD, professor of preventive medicine at Stony Brook University, New York, author, co-author, editor, co-editor, over 30 books, columnist for BuzzFlash, Truth Out, on and on and on, managing editor and contributing author to tpjmagazine.net. In the year 312, the Roman Emperor Constantine saw some kind of a religious vision at some time before a battle in which he defeated his major rival at the time, Maxentius. Just what the nature of the vision was is unclear, but it did lead to Constantine's conversion to what became Roman Catholicism. The event functionally ended close to 300 years of an often underground existence of the early Christian religion, which had previously suffered major episodes of violent persecution from a succession of Roman emperors. Now the church could exist out in the open. Constantine's conversion led to the calling of a grand council of church leaders under the direction of the emperor himself. No separation of church and state there. It was held in the lakeside town of Nicaea. In Turkey, it produced what came to be known as the First Nicene Creed, the first coordinated statement of Catholic doctrine. The bishops were hardly unchallenged in the field of competitive religion. There were still a wide variety of both polytheistic and competing monotheistic religions within both the Eastern and Western sections of the Roman Empire. As well, there were major schisms within their own house over such issues as the true nature of Jesus, human, divine, both. Nevertheless, over time, those conflicts were resolved, sometimes through the use of force. Yes, even over such matters as the nature of Jesus. And then the bishops struggled with what they could do to enlarge their flock and retain their allegiance. They developed a variety of approaches by solving this problem. One major initiative was to focus on sex. Well before the advent of Freudian psychology, the bishops figured out that humans really liked having sex. Well beyond its absolutely necessary role in procreation, sex, after all, is for many folks just plain fun. The sex drive, as Freud told us in modern times, is a very strong one. What better way to cement adherence to the church and its doctrines than to make sex, other than for procreation, somehow dirty? Leading, of course, to sinful. Then, of course, in confession, one could get an excuse for non-procreative sex, but condemnation to hellfire and damnation for having it always lurked in the background. The doctrine was eventually codified by the former libertine St. Augustine of Hippo. According to St. Augustine, quote, sin is passed on through sexual intercourse. So once again, sexual desire is woven into evil. This, through its very transmission. In modern times, while Catholic doctrine still formally adheres to this view of sex in the United States and many other countries, apparently most Catholics ignore it. As do, apparently, many adherents of the various Protestant denominations, some of which do accept certain Augustinian doctrines. They include, for example, the concept of just war, which he invented, despite what the Sixth Commandment has to say on the subject. But you might say, that's all in the past, really ancient history, Doc, is it not? Well, no, it's not. For here and now, lo and behold, certain leadership of the Republican Party is returning to the sex is sinful original Catholic doctrine from the 4th century CE. For example, listen to Rick Santorum and Rush Limbaugh. The seemingly sex-obsessed Rick Santorum tells us that many in the Christian faith have said, well, that's okay, contraception's okay. Well, guess what? It's not okay, because it's a license to do things in the sexual realm that is counter to how things are supposed to be done. End quote. Rush Limbaugh, like Santorum, one of the leaders of the Republicans, tells us that women who use contraceptives do so just so they can have all the sex they want without having to worry about getting pregnant. Since Limbaugh labeled one such woman as a slut and a prostitute, in his mind, non-procreative sex is obviously bad, 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 bad. Limbaugh, Santorum, Blunt, I said, the list goes on and on. They're obviously waging a war on women on a wide variety of fronts. But beyond that, either consciously or unconsciously, they, like their forebears among the Catholic bishops of the 4th century CE, are waging a war on sex for fun as well. Thus, the issue broadens from a war on women to a war on everyone who engages in sex for fun. Whether with a member of the opposite sex, the same sex, or what has been called sex for one. So this is what the Republican Party is becoming as it proceeds to its conversion to what MSNBC political analyst Howard Fineman has called the American Faith Party. Perhaps it should be the American Sex for Fun is Bad Party. If Limbaugh, Santorum, et al. Have their way, it will become the party of the regulation of sex. But hey, if they had their way on other regulatory fronts, there would be a zillion environmental, transportation, healthcare, financial sector, and what have you regulators out of work. What better way? What better way, especially in the promised era of big government gone, than to pull them back to work regulating sex?
Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Oh my goodness, I forgot to set up trivia. All right, we'll do it after the next break. Podcast trivia in about 15 minutes, 10 minutes after the next break, okay? Now, you see why I was mentioning Ann Coulter? A very good piece by Dr. Stephen Jonas about how the Republicans now have formed the Fanatical Junior Anti-Sex League. And I think the cover girl for that is Ann Coulter. Have you ever seen a person who defines the Julia, you know, before she hooked up with Winston, the Julia Junior Anti-Sex League attitude? Have you ever seen an American more into that than Ann Coulter? Just thought I'd toss that in. You can toss it back out if you like. Jason is in Washington, D.C., listening on Sirius. Hello, Jason.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Hello, Jason.
Hey, Mike, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, I wanted to talk to you. I'm so happy when you always ask the lies that politicians tell us.
Uh-huh.
And I was just wondering, you know, are you really going to go to town on this John Corzine? Because not only do we have him lying in front of Congress, but now we have people that work for the company taking the fifth, and now $1.6 billion, you know, missing. And
you know, the Corzine thing is just kind of blown right past me, and I'll tell you why. It's just another example of the corruption that exists inside the capitalist system, and that corruption is just never ending. I don't even address the issue anymore, except in general terms. As long as we have capitalism in this country, we're going to have people like John Corzine, like the heads of these big investment banking firms, and their sole objective is going to be to create money out of nothing. And once they have created that money out of nothing and get other people to invest in this invisible creation, they are going to steal from those people. It is the nature of capitalism to steal, to take what is not yours. So as far as John Corzine is concerned, I couldn't care less.
But you're railing against all of those people before.
Against all of them, that's right. And I will continue to do so. Thank you for your call. I think what you were getting to is the fact that Corzine was a Democrat and you wanted me to get on the Democrat. You know, I've made it as clear as I can to you right-wingers. And that is that, you know, I don't like corruption or hypocrisy, period. So it doesn't make any difference to me if it's done by a Democrat, a Republican, a fascist, a teabagger. Oops, I repeat myself. It doesn't make any difference to me. Corruption is corruption. Just about every religious institution in this country is corrupt. The entire financial system is corrupt. The political system is beyond corruption. Whatever comes after corruption, filth, dirt, human excrement, I don't know. So if you want to call and talk about John Corzine, suggestion, call a different program, because I get where you're going, okay? It's pretty difficult to outfox a fox. But anyway, thanks for checking in. Joan is in Bessemer, Michigan. Hello, Joan.
Hi, Mike. I'm a first-time caller. Really like your show.
Thank you. Is Bessemer in the Upper Peninsula?
It is indeed.
Ah, yes. You're way up there near.
Yep.
Well, you're part of. I hate to say this, but you're part of Minnesota, right?
No, we're Wisconsin. And
or Wisconsin. I'm sorry. All right. Well,
no, they're all the same.
Well, hi, Joan.
Hi. I wanted to make a couple of comments about my frustration and anger over the Trayvon Martin situation.
Okay.
And I was hoping to get your sympathies or empathies with me here. Two things that really, really make me mad. One is the fact that his character was even brought into the issue at all. Like his, like pot residue or a suspension from school gives anybody the right to hunt him down like a dog and kill him. Okay, number one. And number two, I am so disgusted when I turn a channel on television or read the paper and there's all these people defending Zimmerman as though this is an equal situation and each man has a side.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask me, it seems like this is all a very one-sided thing. And so help me understand why people, like, I'll give you an example. I called Alan Colmes' show. I've never called, this is my second time calling a show.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I thought he was like a bleeding heart liberal. So I said, I was talking about my anger with the character, the bringing up of Trayvon's character. And he agreed with me. And then he said, well, George Zimmerman deserves his day in court. And I said, I don't really think so. And he got really upset that I was an un-American and not, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I guess, is anybody else frustrated?
Well, I think, Joan, maybe you should have stated it a little bit differently. what's his name? Alan Colmes is not the brightest bulb in the marquee. What you should have said is you believe that Zimmerman should have his day in court as a defendant.
Yeah.
Because he's the one who killed another human being. It was Zimmerman, by his own admission. Now, I'm not going to use the word alleged. He killed him. He shot him. He shot him in cold blood in the chest and then tried to cop a plea because he knows eventually this is going to happen. He's going to face a second degree murder charge and he's going to be convicted and he is going to go to prison for he'll probably be sentenced to, 6 to 18 years in prison. He'll probably serve about 12. And he knows this. Zimmerman knows this. His attorney knows this. So the outrage is the fact that, first of all, there is a law in Florida, such as the so-called Stand Your Ground law, that allows people to subjectively make a decision as to whether or not they feel threatened. I can't walk 10 blocks from my house without feeling threatened, Joan, but I don't shoot somebody because I feel that way. I feel threatened by morons, idiots, right-wingers, Republicans, people who talk on cell phones when they're driving. I feel very threatened by all these people, cigarette smokers, but I don't carry a gun and shoot them, even though we have the same basic law here in Georgia. Most southern states have this law. This is the law that allows white folks to shoot down black folks. This is precisely why it was put into play. So as far as giving you a rational explanation, I cannot. All I can tell you is that, the next time you call, what's his name?
No, that won't happen again.
Alan Colmes. You have to be very, very explicit. Alan, like so many liberals on the radio right now, walk on eggs. They're terrified that they are going to become the next target for right-wing boycotts and efforts to strip out their advertisers. So they're not going to say anything. The only place you're going to hear it is this show because the right-wingers cannot touch me.
And I really appreciate that because I have learned that people that walk the fence drive me crazy. And so, especially politically. And so to know, I take great solace in knowing that I can sort of vent, via your show. And, just one more thing, and that is, I really hope that comment that Rick Santorum made, I hope that in some world he is punished in a way that is so unforgiving. And that's all I have to say about that.
All right. Well, Joan, thanks for calling in. All right. I hope you call again. Don't make this your first time. Don't make it be your last. Okay.
Well, thanks very much.
And one more thing before you go.
Yeah.
How big is Bessemer, Michigan?
It's about 24,000.
Oh, that's not bad.
It's not bad.
And
not bad.
Is your town on a river?
Yeah, it's on the Black Falls River.
Black Falls River.
Yeah.
Does it have anything to do with iron ore or copper?
Yes, both of those. It's actually on Lake Superior, one of our great lakes, of course.
Uh-huh.
And yes, iron ore. It was a mining town. It was a mining town settled by Northern Italians. So there's a very heavy Italian population here. And it's a ski resort town.
And those mining companies that set up there, did they clean up the mess before they left?
Oh, of course not.
Damn.
Oh no, when it rains, you see all the iron ore drips down the street to this day.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I guess iron ore can't really hurt you. Matter of fact, it's good for your blood, right?
Oh, yeah. You bet. The water. You got to love the water. I got rich up here.
All right, Joan, please call again, okay?
All right. Thanks so much.
All right. Take care. Northern Italians, huh? We know a few of those. Yeah, I know a few of those. I've got them all over in my family. My Italians were so northern, they were almost Austrian. All right, stick around. We'll be back right after this break. One open line here. When we come back from the break, trivia! Trivia! Prepare yourselves. Win a one-year subscription to Malloy Show podcast downloads, commercial-free, in your mailbox every single morning, even on those nights when we have technical screw-ups and all you'll hear is silence. But the retail value of that is only 25 cents a show, so no big loss. Eh? However, you do get a one-year subscription to Malloy Show podcast downloads free of charge. All you have to do is answer the question correctly. And you're a winner. All right, cut the music, maestro, while we talk with Mark with Occupy Seattle. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Mike, it's good to talk to you again. I actually called with an update on stuff that's happening here, but I will definitely play the game because I'd love to get a podcast of your show every day.
All right, are you ready? Now all I have to do is I will ask you a question, multiple choice question, give you the multiples, and you make your choice, all right?
Great, I get a chance to make an ass of myself on national radio. Hooray!
Or you have a chance to win a podcast subscription. Hold on, here we go. Rick Santorum has lately revealed his racism and his ability to cuss like an atheist, while at the same time professing the usual unctuous, self-satisfied brand of Christianity loathed by most sincere followers of Jesus. His most recent racist comment came when he referred to the President of the United States as which of the following? A, a Democrat. B, a blah person. C, an anti-war government nig. Or D, a welfare check cashing, food stamp using, Cadillac driving, crack pipe owning Muslim. Which one is it?
First of all, isn't his campaign chairman God, so he must know what he's talking about. I would say probably all of the above.
No, you have to pick one. All of the above wasn't one of the choices. Let me give you the choices again. A, a Democrat. B, a blah person. C, an anti-war government nig. Or D, a welfare check cashing, food stamp using, Cadillac driving, crap pipe owning Muslim. Which one?
A Democrat.
Oh, Mark, no, that's not the answer. Let me put you on hold, Mark, and I'll come back for an update on the Occupy Seattle movement. Let me see here. Francisco in Austin, Texas. Hey, Francisco.
Hello, sir. How are you doing?
Good. Do you want to play podcast trivia?
I do.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Okay, start the music, maestro. All right, here we go. Rick Santorum has lately revealed his racism and his ability to cuss like an atheist, while at the same time professing the usual unctuous, self-satisfied brand of Christianity loathed by most sincere followers of Jesus. His most recent racist comment came when he referred to the President of the United States as which of the following? A. A Democrat. B. A blah person. C. An anti-war government nig. Or D. A welfare check-cashing, food stamp-using, Cadillac-driving, crack-pipe-owning Muslim.
I would say C.
C. An anti-war government nig. You're absolutely right. All right. Now, the bells and the whistles mean that you have...
Anti-war government nig. The American...
Yeah, you have won... The trivia contest here, Francisco. So before
you
we
know what have... I am so honored because I have not listened to your show ever. This is the first time I've been coming. I was on the road for 1 hour driving.
Yeah,
I was like, who is this guy? And you were just going left and right, and I love it. So
well, let me ask you a very important question. You live in Austin.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, then that's the only city in Texas that we allow people to call in from.
Exactly right. We are the liberal city. That's it. We are surrounded by red everywhere.
Boy, are you ever. All right. Now, before we hang up, after you have your say, before we hang up, I'll put you on hold, and our producer, Kathy, will get the pertinent information so that you can get the podcast delivered every morning. All right, Francisco, do you have anything else that you wanted to say about the program?
No, I just wanted to just say that you speak your mind, and that's why I love listening.
Well, I'm sincerely glad you found the show. I really am.
Oh, I am. I am going to be glued to this radio station. I have, you know, because I'm in my wife's car, and I was going through it. I was like, what is she listening to? She was listening to some other stuff, and I'm like, what is 127? I'm like, I'm listening to this. And I said, oh, okay. Then I started listening to you, and I could not stop listening. So thank you so much for doing what you do. So.
Well, those are kind words, and Francisco, do me a favor, just pass it on among your friends in Austin, all right?
I will.
All right, sir, take care. Stay on the line, Francisco, while Kathy gets the information. Oh, that's nice. That was really nice. Usually when someone says, I just found your show, that usually is followed by a tirade of obscenities that we have to immediately block out. Oh, my God. Boom, ba boom, boom. All right, where are we? Oh, yeah, that's right. Back to Mark with Occupy Seattle. All right, Mark.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
I want to give a shout out to the folks at Occupy Austin, by the way.
All righty.
The Occupy movement is moving along strong. It's getting more and more organized, and people are holding these Occupy conventions all around the country. Unfortunately, some people got arrested at the one in St. Louis, but. By now, that's an old story, and there have been many more people arrested since in New York City. And I believe that the number is up to about 7,000 now, Occupy people being arrested, and I haven't seen any banksters lately getting arrested except in Brazil, evidently. But I wanted to let folks know what's going on up here, and you can check out my article at Huffington Post about this, because you're not going to see it anywhere else in the media, but
okay.
There's a big issue brewing in Seattle about free speech and freedom of assembly, and it has to do with the fact that the Community College District Board of Trustees is trying to pass new laws.
Hey, Mark, let me put you on hold here. I didn't realize you were this close to the bell. Just stay right there, and we'll come back and get the update on what you have to say after the break at the top of the hour here, okay?
Thanks, Mike.
All right, stay right there. We'll be right back. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy. back. It is 7 past the hour. Did I mention, I don't think I did, right before the top of the last hour, the hour was sponsored, last hour was sponsored by John Blizzard Jr. With no better way to celebrate his birthday, go get a mic. Thanks, John, and happy birthday. This hour is being sponsored by Catherine Hemnes. Catherine writes, thanks for keeping it lit, Mike and Kathy. I wish I could afford to do more. From Kathy in Davis, California, where there aren't any live progressive shows on the radio anymore. Thanks, Kathy in Davis, California. Thanks for the sponsorship. Yeah, that's you know, not unlike a lot of cities. I don't think there's any progressive radio show. Is there in Chicago? Well, I guess some of our liberal colleagues are on a station up there. It's just this program that is pretty much not banned, but ignored, and that's because, well, maybe banned, I don't know, because we call liars liars, whether they are professed Christians or professed Republicans or Democrats. It doesn't make any difference. We don't tolerate hypocrisy. We kick ass. We take names. And we go after corporations. We go after politicians. We go after religious figures. And there's no holds barred on the program. And I use very nasty language sometimes when it's necessary. I think what it gets down to is, I want to say to people, you're listening to the Mike Malloy Show. And we've been broadcasting for more than 25 years, bringing, I think, our listeners the very best in hard-hitting take-no-prisoners talk from the progressive left. And we're the first to admit on this program that it's not for everyone. It's not designed for children. It is not designed for cowards. It's a real challenge for liberals. It is not designed for religious fanatics, which in these times seems to be nearly everyone who professes a belief in the religions of the book. Also, it is not designed for cowardly right-wing nuts who can neither tolerate nor understand the truth. But this program is designed to appeal to people who, like me, are struggling to find the truth. We do not have the smug self-assurance of the political and religious right, because we are seekers. And because we are seekers, we will continue to fight the injustice, the intolerance, the bigotry, and fear that is just slammed into this country daily by the right wing. So we are pleased to have you, to know that you decided to join the fight. You are listening to the Mike Malloy Show. Now, back to Mark. All right, Mark, thanks for your patience. Occupy Seattle. All right, let's chat.
First of all, you know, I want to say that I'm really proud that Seattle was one of your number one rated media markets, you know, for your show. So they brought you back pretty quickly here after Air America, and I really appreciate that. So we're lucky in Seattle that we have AM 1090 to hear a lot of these really progressive voices on the air. And I know that we live in a bubble here, so it's sad that the rest of the country is getting all sorts of, you know.
Well, I'm real happy that AM 1090 has kept this program on all these years. They have been a very reliable partner in getting this program out. We're very much indebted to AM 1090.
You're very popular in Seattle, and I want to thank you for helping us with, you know, helping let us get the word out about the Occupy movement.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can probably tell in the corporate media lately, there's not much coverage. Even though if people are watching the live stream every night, they've been watching people in New York City in the Occupy Wall Street movement trying to get back into Zuccotti Park and Union mm-hmm. Square every single night, and being met by hundreds of police officers that barricaded police off and pushed them off and occasionally beat them and arrest them. But in Seattle, I'm also proud to say that we've had thousands of people here marching together for Trayvon Martin, and his cousin Cedric was actually up here organizing with the community. So it was really great to see folks of all shapes and sizes and colors marching together. Mm-hmm.
What is the attitude in Seattle? You said before we had to take all the breaks and everything, you said there is an attitude that is not real pro-free speech in Seattle?
Well, what's happened is, you know, our Occupy encampment was pushed out of Westlake Park, and our tents were confiscated, just like everyone across the country. I mean, it's still actually happening in different places around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then we occupied Seattle Central Community College. At the time, there were no state laws regulating camping on any community college campus. So there was no way for them to get rid of us. But what they did was they went to court, and the judge sided with them, saying that they were allowed to pass some emergency rules and blaming all sorts of issues on us that which we've proven were never true to begin with. It was all pretty much propaganda. But now what they've done is they've decided, as a reaction to our encampment in fall, to try to pass a whole new series of rules that restrict freedom of speech and assembly on campus. And it's getting totally out of control. I mean, the ACLU is all over this because the school wants to restrict the size of protest signs. Mm-hmm. And the new rules state that no protester shall be allowed to hold more than one sign. And non-student groups would have to notify the college 24 hours in advance of any demonstration. So it's a clear tactic. Also, the protests would only be allowed in so-called free speech zones. And anyone who violates any of these new rules will be subject to arrest by city police for trespass.
Well, let me ask you a couple of things. Are these city ordinances that are being proposed, or state laws, or what are they?
These are state rules. They're not even considered laws that cover community colleges in the city of Seattle. So this would cover three different campuses, the North, South, and Central community colleges.
All right. You mentioned a minute ago that the city went to a judge to get an emergency order. Was that just for the community college campuses? That was not for public thoroughfares or public areas in Seattle, was it?
Well, they used a park ordinance to arrest people and kick us out of Westlake Park, but the college has used their own campus rules, which have to be approved by the Community College Board of Trustees. So what they started to do, we kind of outed them because they were doing this secretly. They had to hold a public hearing according to state law. Mm-hmm. What they did was they held their hearing during spring break when none of the students were at the school. So we jumped them on that, got it out to the media really quick.
Oh, God.
With the help of a reporter at the Seattle Times, brought in, 100 people to the hearing, and not one person, of course, spoke in favor of these new rule changes. They were forced to offer another period for public comment on April 5th because of the outcry in the community. But the inside scoop is that they're going to pass these laws anyway because there's nothing in the process that requires them to even consider public comment. They're just doing this as a formality to get the process done. And they're going to pass these rules, which means by May, there will be major confrontations on the community colleges in Seattle because people are not going to stop protesting.
Yeah, well, I would also hope that there would be a massive legal challenge. Just because somebody decides to attend a community college, you don't leave the Constitution out on the curb when you walk onto the property of a community college. I mean, I've never heard of a community college being able to pass rules that supersede the U.S. Constitution, where it concerns the right of the people to peacefully assemble and so on and so forth. This is madness. I had no idea that something like this would be tried in a progressive area like the Seattle area.
Well, it's a direct response to the Occupy Wall Street.
Well, sure.
I mean, directly response to our encampment. They don't want it to happen again. The ironic thing is that, as far as I know, no one within the Occupy Seattle organization has even proposed camping at Seattle Central Community College again. But now,
well, it's called a preemptive strike, don't you think, Mark?
Yes, but it's stirring up more controversy and more willingness amongst, by the way, most of the people who testified at the hearing were students and teachers. In fact, the faculty...
Hey Mark, hold on one more time, because I want to hear the rest of what you have to say. There's something I want to ask you, but I've got to do some a break here. Stay right there, Mark, if you would. We'll be right back. 21 past the hour. We're talking with Mark from Occupy Seattle. Just a quick question, Mark. What is the plan of Occupy in Seattle to these attempts to pass these ordinances and rules and regulations and so on and so forth, restricting on a college campus, for God's sake, the right to demonstrate or discuss or protest? What reaction is planned? Any?
Well, yes, the same reaction that we had when I was banned with my press pass on, by the way. I was detained and banned from the state capitol during Occupy protests there during the state budget cut.
Mm-hmm.
I was dragged out by the Washington State Patrol and then banned from the place without ever having been charged with anything or seeing a judge. So what we did was we went to a federal judge, and Judge Robert J. Bryan granted us a temporary restraining order and then an injunction, and by the end of it, the Washington State Patrol had to settle with us because the judge said this is a violation of freedom of speech and assembly.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to happen again. We're going to have to go to court, and it's probably not going to be able to happen, unfortunately, until the rules are actually approved. Until then, this is all a sort of arbitrary bureaucratic process, and so you can't block something that hasn't been passed. But once these are passed, and mm-hmm. that's going to happen in May, then there will have to be court challenges. There'll have to be. And I'm hoping once again we'll find a sympathetic federal court judge who has actually read the U.S. Constitution.
I'm sure that this is on the minds of Occupy folks, but I would hope that in addition to court challenges, there would be massive, unrelenting the presence of people in huge numbers who would enter into campuses and do whatever the hell is guaranteed by the Constitution. And if that means massive arrests, it means massive arrests. You know, I'm talking about nonviolence. I'm talking about peaceful, nonviolent reaction, resistance. We don't quite live in a police state. We're getting very close to it. Fascism has not totally taken over. That's getting very definitive in some of our laws. But I would hope that the people in Seattle, members of Occupy, and people who are not members of Occupy, not that there's a membership, but you know what I'm saying, people who involve themselves with the Occupy philosophy, that they would show up in massive numbers and say to the authorities, this is ridiculous, and we're going to prove it's ridiculous by showing up in the thousands. And if you want to go through the process of arresting 15,000 people, let the games begin. You know what I'm saying?
I do, and what's happening at the moment is that people are focused on these public hearings, so the hearings have become a protest in themselves. I mean, mm-hmm. I carried in two protest signs myself and stood in front of the Board of Trustees and said, look, I will be arrested as of March 14th for carrying these two signs. And what the sign said was, you are violating my free speech.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how ridiculous the situation is. And there are going to be protests. There already have been protests. And I would encourage people that want to find out more, go to the OccupySeattle.org website, and there's a blog up there that I wrote mm-hmm. that explains this whole situation.
Okay.
But what we do need to organize in Seattle, you're right, and we need to get everybody together on this. And as far as I can tell, the community is pretty much set against it. It's just that we're dealing with a bureaucratic board of trustees and a school administrator, including the Seattle Central Community College president, Paul.
The community is set against these rules, you're saying?
Yes, but
right.
The college administration doesn't seem to care. It's another
right.
situation where you have people that are supposed to be representing the community.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, it's our tax money that pays for this public institution.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not listening. They don't seem to care. They're very frightened of any kind of protest.
All right,
and
Mark.
They always come down,
Mark,
they
listen.
Always come down on the side of public safety, and in reality, no student is ever.
Well, this is not a public safety issue. This is how they frame it, and it's not that at all. Mark, I'm going to have to leave it there, but don't hang up, because while you were talking, a caller called in and donated to you a podcast subscription. So, if you will hold on, Kathy will get the pertinent information. And you'll have it in your whatever device, wherever you get your email, it'll be there every morning. Keep us posted on what happens with Occupy Seattle, please, all right?
I will, Mike. Solidarity.
All right. Take care, Mark. Stay on the line. Kathy will, I guess, an anonymous. Was it anonymous donation? Oh, Kathy's just kind of shaking her head there. We'll know in a minute. All right, we're coming up on another break, so stick around. When we come back, we will continue. Arnold in Durham is on hold. Oh, good God. I've been hoping Arnold was going to call in. Arnold, you're next when we come back. And Gino and Mac, if you stick around. Oh, there goes Gino. What happened, Gino? You got tired of waiting. I understand. All right. Give us a call if you want to chat. 877-996-2556. And we'll be back momentarily. Did you wake up? For the hour. This hour is sponsored by Catherine Hemnes. Her message, thanks for keeping it lit. Mike and Kathy, I wish I could afford to do more. Kathy in California, where there aren't any live progressive shows on the radio anymore. I hear you. Thanks, Kathy. Okay. Oh, man. Arnold, your phone is all static.
I know, man. And I hate that, because I'm the Michael Lloyd Show residential nig, and I got to talk to you tonight.
You got to get someplace where I don't have static. We can't hear you.
All right, let me call you right back.
Okay, call us back. I hate that. Kevin in Colorado Springs, listening online. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, good evening, Mike. When you were in Washington, by the way, that was a great 2 days of broadcast, very informative, and I really enjoyed listening to that.
Thanks.
There was supposed to be a rally for Trayvon Martin during the time you were in Washington there. Did you by chance get to attend that? Or?
No, I'll tell you, we were so focused on, the people that sponsored that event and the people to whom I felt an obligation to go ahead and do what I'd agreed to do, and that was interview all those people, even though I made it clear to everybody that I was in favor of single payer. They had us pretty much wired down, and being in that city without a car, I didn't have a whole lot of choices, but I didn't even know where it was. I saw one night that on the local news in D.C. about the fact that demonstration had occurred. But, no, I didn't get a chance to attend it.
Well, I just want to encourage everybody to continue signing the petitions and continue to keep putting the pressure on the Justice Department and the Stanford Police Department to adjudicate this case properly. It just is sad to me. What's been done to this poor kid after he died. There's no reason or cause to do that. And you said they ought, earlier in the program you were talking about, they should be ashamed. And the trouble is, some of these people might just can't feel shame.
I know.
It's not an emotion they feel.
Yeah, they would rather see bloodshed. People like Michelle Malkin and the crazy one that I mentioned earlier, Ann Coulter. There's so many American women who identify themselves with the neo-fascist movement in this country. American women on media who are very much like the women in fascist Spain or Italy or Germany who identified and defined themselves by the attitudes of the fascist regimes that were coming into power in those countries. And Malkin is one of them. The whole Fox crew is another group. And, of course, Ann Coulter, who defines female self-hatred. She really does. Kevin, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Arnold, are you there?
Yep, man, I'm here now.
All right, no static. That's cool. What's up?
That's great.
Who do you say you are? The resident what?
I'm the Mike Mazur Show, residential nig. I'm always like, you're like Jack Benny, Roscoe, you got Arnie, I tell you.
Well, listen.
These guys got something up their sleeve, Michael. I'm so scared this election year. They got so much single. They left all that stuff up there. It can be bombed off the earth from our ways, but and it's just unbelievable how they just, you know, they used to hide this stuff, man.
Right,
they're
right.
Out in plain daylight, you know.
Yes.
You know, it's just scary, man.
It is
scary.
Indeed. It is indeed.
Program going on. What happened down there in Florida? Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm just sick with that, you know.
I don't know how anybody in this country can't be sick by it, and yet, if you check out some of the right-wing cesspools on the internet, some of the right-wing garbage dumps on television and radio, you find these people talking the stuff that they're talking. And it's one more example of 10,000 for me, anyway, in the past 4 or 5 years, of how sick this country has become and how degenerate so many people in this country really are. And they're all on the right. I mean, we have fools on the left, we have clowns on the left, but we don't have people on the left that I'm aware of, anyway, who are just eaten up with this kind of ugly, nasty,
evil
hatred, and where they want to destroy the country. You know, here's the thing. To me, people on the left, to varying degrees, want to try to improve or save the country, and people on the right, to varying degrees, want to destroy it. And I don't know how. I fell asleep the day we had all our lessons in nonviolence because I still want to just pick up a club and start swinging. You know what I'm saying?
You know, Mike, it's hard for us not to do that. You know, I pray that whatever this situation comes to be, there will be no violence even at the verdict if there's such a thing as a trial in this situation.
No, I agree.
You know,
I agree.
Listen to that boy's father talk the other day. I was almost sick to my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like he was talking right out of Rush Limbaugh's, John Hennessy's playbook when he was saying the president is so hateful and mad, and the black caucus, and they are all full of hate and anger. We won't get a fair standing nowhere around here with all this fate. Who put it there? Who put the hate and anger there? Come on, man.
I know.
It's sickening, man. It's sickening. I hope the energy that I see in this boy's death among the black people in this country transfers into the energy I see within the movie. You just talked to this guy over there in Seattle, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
I hope these combined energies come together this year.
I think it will.
God has provided us a warm season.
Mm-hmm.
Just take it up and do something with it.
I think that's about to happen. I think there's an awful lot of movement in this country right now that is coalescing, that is coming together, that is just saying enough of this. I think this summer we're going to see the beginning, perhaps. You know, somebody told me the other day, something that I've talked about several times, half in jest, but half meaning it. And somebody pointed out to me the other day, we are going to wind up
not the United States of America, but the Federated States of America. We are going, this country's going to break into about three or four pieces, five pieces maybe. And kind of like the old nations of the Soviet Union. Now it's called the Russian Federation. I guess they're back to two or three or maybe four countries who are back in the Federation. But it's going to happen. I mean, we can't divide ourselves geographically because we're on one landmass here. But there is so much in so much difference in attitude in this country among mostly among the white folks, but also some Latinos, not so many African Americans, I don't think, but it's a white thing, like so much that has caused so damn much trouble in this country. It's a white thing, and I think there's going to be a fracturing of this republic, and I don't think it's going to, you know, I don't think it's going to be bloody like these crazy people here in the South tried to pull off 150 years ago. I don't think it's going to be horrifying, but I think it's going to be a definite break. Do you get that sense?
Yeah, I do. I do get that sense. You know what I've heard too many people say. I think I heard you say it one time before. This kid has got his marching orders from the likes of Neil Bork. You heard what Neil Bork said on a radio show one night about, you know, we got to live the landscape with these thugs.
I know. I used to work I worked in the same station with Bortz, and I know where Bortz's head is. I know exactly where it is.
Yeah, I mean, this kid actually must have listened to that show. Then went and did it. Well, of course, he done it 49 times in a row. It's almost like he practiced and get enough nerve to actually kill somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I'm telling you, as sad over here as things are, where things are going, I feel it because I go 48 states in this truck. I feel a surge of almost like a white nationalist movement, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And you got to be careful, man, because you got people here like they call the Slobberton citizens.
I know.
They'll blow your head off, man. I mean, they'll kill a whole bunch of people one time.
Mm-hmm.
It's dangerous over here, and something's got to move. Something's got to go. We got to have a movement that bring this country back together. And the way the right wingers are doing it, over the airways, it's scary, Mike. It's really scary.
Well, I'd like, that's what I was saying, Arnold. I'd like to see, you know, my country, my nation come back together. But it has not been, I don't think it's ever been together. It tolerated, there are certain factions in this country that just tolerated each other. And then you had the explosion in the 1860s. And you know, this country never healed from that.
Never.
That whole attitude is still there. That whole racist thing is still there. That whole states' rights thing is still there. That whole militia thing is still there. Hey, hold on a second. Let me do this and we'll come back. We'll take a quick break here. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. Before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Kathy in Davis, California. Thanks, Kathy. She writes, keeping it lit. Thanks for keeping it lit, Mike and Kathy. I wish you could afford to do more. Kathy from Davis, California, where there aren't any live progressive shows on the radio anymore. You're doing fine, Kathy. Thanks for the sponsorship. Appreciate it very much. All right, Arnold, I just want to ask you something about North Carolinians. You know, just the general sense that you get about how folks are reacting to the situation in Sanford, Florida.
They are outraged about the actions of the police. This crossed the racial line, where the police has just done absolutely nothing. This kid was not I mean, just the bumbling of evidence, the way it was handled, it was like, you know, like the good old boy way of doing it. And a lot of my friends, and like I said, whether it's black or white, they are outraged by the way this situation has been handled. And it's, the outrage is sincere there. I mean, like his mother said, black and white, that's irrelevant right now. We're talking about right and wrong. And it's just, you know, oh, man, I'm telling you. I've gotten people straight in my little truck driving world here. They tell me, well, those people down there, they're so unsophisticated, they don't know nothing. Well, at the sophisticated police department in New York, believe it takes 49 bullets to bring down a unarmed right. black man. So I don't, you know, and then nobody go to jail for it, you know.
Let me ask you this, Arnold. Do you feel that the attitudes that were so horrific for black folk in the 50s are starting to resurface? Do you feel a surge in racism? And some of it, of course, is going to come because of the race of our president. But do you feel that this is coming? Let me, before you answer, I'll tell you, I damn sure do.
Oh, I feel it. I feel it, Mike. I tell you, I can go here anywhere in this country and you can feel it. You can see it. Especially in concentrated areas. Like right now, I'm at a truck stop in Kentucky. And I tell you, I had an encounter at the countertop when I wouldn't got my, whatever I had to buy there. I mean, you can tell it. It's almost like you can cut it with a knife. It's so tense in this country. And I'm not doing this to raise up anything or gin something up because the right wing is ginning everything up.
Sure.
The talk shows, the craziness that's going on out here, man, you can feel it. You can feel it. And this situation that happened down there in Sanford, Florida, my God, it's like almost getting ready to, you know, like the firing on Fort Sumter, you know, get this fireworks started, let's get the show going. And that's what it is. That's how I feel it is. That is almost like that, you know. You said it one day this week, or like, well, maybe last week, I think you were saying, these guys are preparing for a civil war. They're getting people armed, you know.
The right wing talking heads that are so destructive, everybody from Bortz to Limbaugh to Savage to Beck to Hannity, all of them, and all the lower tiered punks that infest talk radio from the right, they want violence. They want to see bloodshed. To them, it's sport, and we've talked about this before. These are people who do not have either a moral sense or a sense of justice. They are devoid of both because they buy into right-wing whatever, whether it's this extreme right-wing religious nonsense or the right-wing political nonsense or the right-wing economic nonsense. They're killers. They're destroyers. Yeah. They are people who... At the first sign of somebody about to smack them upside the head with a 2x4, they would run and hide under the nearest rock. But as long as they can stir folks up to go at each other, this is a game to them. And
that's,
you know,
right.
You know, I've been talking about this for a decade. It's so easy to see, but sometimes I think, you know, maybe because of the nature of the work I do, all I see is the negative. That's why I ask folk outside of this business, what are you hearing? What are you seeing? And the same message is coming back, what you just said.
You know, the 2010 election wiped out a lot of things that have been achieved in this country. The peace and tranquility in this country has almost been wiped out. But just because of that election, where it swung in many states, you know, where there was just a almost an even balance of Republican Democrats. Now, when it got wiped out, all Democratic Congress, local Congress, and state Congresses,
right,
it done wiped out a whole lot
that's
of
right.
things that kept this country in.
Well, that's where all these laws against women, a woman's right to privacy, and that's what this is about. You know, Roe v. Wade had nothing to do with abortion. It had to do with a woman's right to privacy. And that's why all these state legislatures and state and these governors, all this right-wing madness that came in 2010, and that's why women are feeling this legislative attack, and why black folk are getting getting this attack, this attitudinal attack, and this attack in the street. I'm not in a very good mood tonight, Arnold, because first of all, this damn pollen's been driving me crazy. But secondly, yeah. As I watch all this stuff unfold, and I just think to myself, you know, this is Emmett Till all over again. This is the This is the 50s again. This is coming out of. I can remember. Having a sense, a feeling of coming out of darkness as we came out of the 50s into the 60s and into the 70s, and then something happened, and now here we are again. But, you know, the Emmett Till case, well, you know, that was a brutal, violent case. It still resulted in a young black kid being brutally killed to the point where, if you remember that case, his mother insisted that it be an open coffin when they brought his body home so that folks could see what had happened to her son.
Destruction of it. That's, when his faith was just
that's right.
Totally
that's
destroyed.
Right. And you know, I was alive. I mean, I remember this stuff. And it just, sometimes it seems to me like it should be ancient history, but it's not. Arnold, I got to leave it there, pal. We're out of time.
All right, my brother.
Take care.
I'll see you later. It's good talking to you again.
All right, take it easy, Arnold. Watch your back, man. Just be careful. Just be careful. You know where you live. I know where I live. Take care, Arnold. I'll see you Monday. Okay. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. Nature Seekers, Mike.